I'm the guy that dies at the beginning of the movie. I'm the one who never makes it out of the cave. It's because just when I have got everything going for me, baby, you come around and take it all away. Whoa, whoa.
Tim, what's up, my friend?
Oh, what's up?
All right.
Can you see us and hear us okay?
Yeah. Nobody told me Toby was going to be on here, though. That's
I'm
a bit
back.
Of a problem.
Yeah, I know, man. You've always been a thorn in my side.
Ever since that day you fell off the stage in Australia.
That's right. That's exactly right.
What was that Australia fall off the stage? I don't remember it. Let Tim tell it. Let Tim tell it.
Okay.
Well, it was, I love how he's like, no, let Tim tell it.
Then you can.
All I remember is we were in Australia and we were at, I believe, the Roundhouse. Toby, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So we're at the Roundhouse and we were all Emery, Under Oath, Caucasian Christian hardcore bands,
yep,
having a lot of libations. And it was when Toby had the wireless mic with the 3 foot of loom that looked like a sperm, and he had a sperm mic, and he went on stage fully red face, flush. We went a little too hard. We hadn't even played yet, and we were all just gone. And he was just singing. I think it might have been on Party On or one of those songs, and he was just in the moment, and you could see in his face, but he was like, looked like the devil, and just stepped somewhere and fell right in between like the monitor and the barricade, which was like this big, and fell straight over. Or you tripped on something.
Yeah.
But we were all up in that like stage right viewing dressing room with the window. We were all watching you guys. We're like, man, Toby's like in it right now. And then he just ate shit. And we were just like, oh my God. What have we all done? And I don't even remember our show, so it's probably just as good.
That has happened to me so many times, falling off the stage or falling in between two subs or something like that. You know, there's two subs that are just foot width apart or something. So my foot slides down in there or something.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Two black giant boxes that you can stand on with a...
In the dark.
With the 8-inch black gap between the two black boxes. Right. Yeah, that's a good idea.
100%. 100%.
Well,
boys, how are we?
We're doing really good, Tim. We're just going to roll live from the top of the show here, and we'll keep that as the intro of the show. We don't even have any promo to do, so we'll just really talk. We have a BC69 workout challenge, mental, physical, all this stuff that we're doing starting next week, but it's sold out, so I'm not even promoting it. I'm just gloating that it's sold out and happy that so
Hell
many
yeah.
people are doing it. We have two teams. We kind of sold out, and we opened it up to another flight, so there's two teams. There's a team 6 and a team 9,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So team 6 is so funny. It's like military team 9 too.
Yeah.
Team
yeah.
6 and 9. And I like it.
But
and the so reason is this going on YouTube? Like, should I make sure I don't do anything weird on the camera or what?
No, you're good. Are you recording your audio on your side? Can you do that?
I am not.
Take your time here. We can edit or whatever, but see if you could. If you could make a recording over there, but if not, that's
well,
fine.
Well, while Tim's doing his audio, we might as well also say the reason we split up into teams is because so many people signed up, but also that gives two people a chance to win the big prize,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's two prizes now, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so that's really nice. We had so many people get in, and those people that got in, whether they get a T-shirt, there's some other options you can get as well. And this lasts for 69 days starting this Friday.
Yeah. Right. And we're going to get to give away a couple $1,000s to a charity now, too. So we're not taking any profit off of the whole thing. This is just something to do as a, you know, digital. It's like, to me, it's turned into a big board game that you play interactively online and in the physical world. That's kind of what it feels like. It's like a scavenger hunt / board game, but with you playing with people all over the world in kind of in cloud and reality. So I'm kind of excited about
well,
just
let me,
what
let me,
it is.
I'm
69 days of fitness. Is that what we're talking about?
Yep. There's a lot of mental things mental. In there too, and other discipline things, just to get control of yourself and life, and you know, take yourself to another type of level, make a little, be able to make change, that kind of.
Now, thing. Here's the downside for me, for sure, is when we did the very first BC 69 back, what, last July, 2019 was mm-hmm. the very first one. And I went, you know, it's no alcohol. I went cold turkey and loved it and ended up being so happy. And then, you know, Christmas came. I had a drink or two and then COVID hit. And I was just, and now I'm like, oh, shit, this Friday night, it's Friday. I'm going to wake up and there's no alcohol for 69 days. And right on this side of the 69 days, I'm like, I'm a little worried. I don't, what happens if there's a party, or what if it's been a long day? You know, all the excuses you give yourself. But I mean, there's going to be a rough week where a nice drink would be a glass of wine with my wife or something. You know, all those thoughts are coming in my head. But once I get to, it's probably about, I would say 40 days in, you don't miss alcohol whatsoever. Like, in fact, even the idea of it seems stupid. But right now I'm a drinker. I'm having a beverage right now because I'm trying to cram all my alcohol in before Friday.
Tim,
cheers, brother.
Yeah.
Have you done any non-drinking periods, Tim? Or you've been a drinker? You know, I've been drinking multiple drinks a day for 15 years until this last year or so.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I did Whole 30 with my wife right before we went to a race meet, and that worked out really well. I felt really good, like kind of like my testimony's like Toby's, you know. I got washed in the blood of, you know, yep, sobriety. And not only that, but just eating well, and you sleep good, you wake up, you're clear, and then you're just bored and you're miserable, you know? And I'm with Toby. It's like, you know, but, oh, it's our friend's birthday, but like, no, it's like day 14. So you can't do anything. And all of a sudden you just become this shell of a human in a culture that's wrapped around like splurging every once in a while and doing a little this and a little that. And it's like, for me, the hard line, like can't do it, won't do it ever, just doesn't work. Because I don't know, Toby, if you had the same scenario, but it's like the first day off of day 70 for you, you know, day 31 for me.
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like? And you kind of dive back in and then you realize like your body's not used to it. And within 3 to 4 weeks, you kind of work yourself right back into where you were.
Yeah.
And for me, it's more of a long game now, you know, working out more, drinking less, but not ever being in a spot where it's like, oh, I can't do that, or I won't do that, or that's against my Tim Ferriss book that I just read, which I think is a really good kickstart to allow people to feel how their bodies can react.
Yeah.
But as a long-term thing, yeah, it doesn't really work for me.
Yeah.
It works for me if I stick with it. Like after the 69 days, I was like, I don't care about alcohol. I worked out. I was I felt like a changed person.
That is so sick.
But the downside was, I really do think when COVID hit, the boring thing was just the most massive thing of all, because it was just us with our three kids in a house for, you know, months.
So
I mean, we barely
boring,
left, and yeah,
boring, so that, but really, also terror.
Yeah, yeah, and so anything to get away from those kids, or to mute the volume a little bit, anything to get out of your head of everything's over, death is outside your door. I was like, I don't give a shit about anything. I'll drink forever. I don't care if I wake up, and you know, I didn't really do that, but that is what really got me. I wish I would have not done that, because I think I would have been better off for sure. And so I'm kind of excited to get cleaned up a little bit here and start exercising again. We moved to a new place. It's, you know, we really like it. And so I'm excited to do it. But for me, the discipline of it and the hard line is almost the only thing that'll work. Because if I go, okay, I'll have a beer, then it's next week and I've had 100,000 beers since the moment I said, yeah, this one beer, I'll have one Miller Lite. Okay.
Yeah.
That ain't happening. That
said
ain't happening.
Toby never.
Right. I don't think I've ever been able to say that. I'm going to have one drink. If I had, I knew I was lying. Everybody did.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. Well, what was interesting, and you know, this might play into this, is like this idea of everything being essential and non-essential when COVID hit, right? And all of a sudden it's like churches are closed, schools are closed. And then at least our governor, I don't know if it was nationwide, but our governor literally said liquor stores and package stores are essential. And then right. I started seeing these Vice articles and all this stuff coming out about if you cut that supply off for all of America, you are wreaking havoc on domestic violence, like all these things. And it was so interesting to kind of step back and realize the things that we do daily, like my cheesesteak, my pizza, my beer, my glass of wine, my bottle of wine, whatever the limit is, how much that plays into us mentally and psychologically being able to kind of cope and or at least shove a weird rough day to the side so much to where a lot of people that are smarter than us theoretically and have way more power than us decided that's essential, but massage therapy and chiropractic therapy isn't for this time.
But that's an interesting thought that the call, I mean, when you frame it that way, it really is, I mean, it's a good argument to say that liquor stores are actually essential, not just a decision that a governor made, but you think about how many people they have, they are drinking to cope with something. It's not just random. And so if they can't drink, first of all, some of them would get sick and explode or whatever. But I mean, just a lot of people would, if you couldn't have, think of how irritable you are on day five of some diet or whatever, like you're more irritable. So yeah, you're going to, those people that are prone to domestic violence or abuse or whatever, it's going to really make a difference because they are self-medicating and it is medicine and the alcohol is essential. So humans have some need to avoid stuff and then they don't have better skills, you know, like some people can go without and not beat people, but some people cannot. So you
think. And it's even bigger than like this idea of like, oh, if you stop drinking, you're going to, you know, beat the hell out of your wife or kids. It's that little stuff, right? Like it's that idea of like unwinding or like patterns. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what do you do when you're on a diet, Toby? Like day five of day 69, like, okay, I'm not doing this. I have a craving for this. So I'm going to go run. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to work overtime at the studio or work. Yeah. And when in specifically COVID world, like there is no gym. There is no sauna. There is no massage therapy. There's no way to replace these things. Like you can't strip a human being of every single thing.
Right.
And it's like, even down here, it was funny because it's like, you know, weed places were essential. And it's like, so dispensaries, liquor stores, essential, massage therapists, even dentists for a time, like screw your cavity, but like go grab a handle of Tito's. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like losing their mind.
Did y'all drop Tim? I don't hear audio there.
We lost you, Tim.
All right, Tim. I think Tim's audio is frozen there, so let me just take the opportunity. Reva, can you play some of this music that we're supposed to play for people here and see what they think about it? Now, I like it. I'm a big fan, and I know I'm not the only one. You catch on what's going on here? You're hearing this? You're listening to Stockholm. It's the newest single from, can you guess? Does anybody know? Does anybody know already? Fit for a King. Their new record, The Path. The Path comes out this Friday, September 18th. And it's Fit for a King's sixth studio album. We've run a few commercials for them here. I always say it's crazy how much success they've had. Tooth and Nail talks to me about them all the time when I'm talking to them. Whatever they're doing, I can't figure it out, but it is working. So excited to see where they're going. Stockholm hasn't been officially released anywhere yet, so you can hear it only right here and by pre-ordering the album at merchlimited.com. Because again, the release date is Friday, the 18th. So this is also the start of BC69. Big day, Friday the 18th. And that's merchlimited.com. So tons of build-your-own merch pre-order bundles there. They are still available at fitforakingband.com. You can go there. The Path is out this Friday. I'll say it one more time. The Path from Fit for a King out this Friday. But you can go listen to the other singles that they've already released now. Go follow them on Spotify, Solid State Records, Fit for a King. Okay.
No one's gonna say.
All right, Tim, are you back there?
I am very sorry.
No, you're good.
I'm on Bluetooth right now. And,
no, you're good.
Yeah.
It's back
on. And I can't get a DAW to record this audio because I am on AirPods.
That's all right. They sound good. They sound good.
Yeah, it sounds good. But that's what I'm saying. Just going along with the liquor stores being open or things that people need, there is something to be said for your personal choice of what 100%. You want to do. You know what I mean? And like, if you want to risk getting COVID to go get therapeutic massage or a chiropractor or whatever you want to do, that I do want to respect that. Now, I want you to wear a mask. I want you to be careful and all this stuff. But the way that you are told to do so, I just saw because on our last AYL, we were talking about Oasis and what's the Noel Gallagher?
Liam and Noel, yeah.
Which one's the lead singer and which one's the guitar player? Song?
Liam is the singer.
Okay, so Noel said, too many liberties have been taken away from me. I'm not wearing a mask. And I was like, that's so funny. Part of me thinks he's so stupid and an idiot. And then part of me is like, okay, just do what you want. Stay away from me or whatever. But the idea there that we see something so clearly as right or wrong when I don't think it is. For example, the same way as take out mental health drugs, cholesterol. My wife was told her cholesterol was too high, and so they started charging, our insurance started charging us an extra $80 a month because her cholesterol is too high. Now, I know y'all don't, Tim, you don't know my wife that much, but she couldn't eat healthier, couldn't be in better shape, and is basically a long-distance runner that runs and exercises all the time. I almost couldn't be a healthier person. And I was like, it's just her cholesterol's a little high. That doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. You're just telling me that, and you get to make money off of it because you're saying this is bad, but lots of people's cholesterol is high, and it could be bad, but also maybe some people's run high, and there's that same insurance company is going to do a lot of investigation about the different levels of cholesterol because what they want to do is just get the money. They'd rather just say, this is the right one, and if you go over it, you got to pay.
Yeah. Do y'all know that cholesterol, by the American Heart Association, has been officially taken off the list of nutrients of concern? Like, there's no restriction on eating it.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Go on.
It's just not. I mean, basically, the way it works is that people don't typically understand is the cholesterol you eat does not go into your blood. All the cholesterol in your blood that can be tested is synthesized in your liver, and it's not tied to the cholesterol that you eat. Also, if your other blood levels are good on your HDLs and LDLs and triglycerides in the right proportions, they do not have any concern about what your cholesterol level is in the right circumstance there. So it in itself and eating it doesn't cause you to have higher in your blood, and it's not in the right configuration of a blood pattern, it's not even an issue. So that's a big shift, toward what it used to be 20 years ago. And so, and maybe that's not all settled or whatever it is, but the idea that insurance companies will charge you for what they deem healthy or whatever, then there's whole industries and pill industries and who deems what's safe and starts charging for overages and all that. It's a mess,
sure.
All that stuff is such a, I guess with COVID, my feeling is that we're seeing a ton of regulation on everything. Like, it's just who can get their hands into what we know that people have agendas in power no matter what. And if they can start controlling things, they tend to. And so as chaotic as everything is now, you just never know what's getting monkeyed with and who's keeping what regulation for what reason. And I mean, I'm not saying all regulations are bad, but it's so hard to... It's so hard to have a grip on it all. How about in Florida for a bar owner? What's it like for that?
Oh, man. Yeah, Florida has been, for good reason, the laughing stock, I think, of the country and at times the world when we set the, fourth highest or highest record for the country. And I think at one point, if we were our own country, we would have ranked fourth total out of all the countries in the U.S.
Well, in fairness, Florida's been the laughingstock of the world for at least a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I'm here. That's why King State's called King State, because we have to change that. I mean, it's been weird. It's at first, nobody knew what was going on, and we all kind of were left to our own devices. I think, thinking infrastructurally, the hardest thing is there's no communication systems statewide. So the DBPR or the governor say something, and we're not all on an email list. So mm-hmm. I'm on a text chain with like 10, 12 bar restaurant owners all sharing the information they're getting from different sources, because for a minute there's like something passed and you have no idea that you're not allowed to have bar stools or you have to have masks. And, you know, someone tells me, I Google it and I get the local newspapers, but there's nothing above that on the state level. And it's just a really interesting dynamic to be in a bit of the wild, wild west, which I think makes Florida, Florida, when it's good. And it makes it really challenging when things are, you know, moderately crumbling around you. But for us, we've been really good. I mean, King State, our bar is also a coffee and brunch spot. So all of the regulations that came top down were for bars and nightclubs specifically. So if you don't serve food, you're not a restaurant, or you're a nightclub or a venue, you have to close. And we, you know, naturally were under the radar on that and just had to go to go. And then as capacity opens up, 25%, 50% limited capacity, which, you know, we at King State have always been a bit ahead of the governor. Like when everything was like no dining inside, we were already shutting down our dining room and going to go only 4, 5, 6 days before. And so we've always kind of looked at what's coming and had a more rational thought on what's actually happening and made decisions for our company way before we need someone, you know, from Tallahassee to tell us how to act. So it's been challenging, but overall it's been good.
And I think you're open and you have people inside or what?
Yeah, I actually just got off a shift. I worked 9 to 2 today.
Nice.
And yeah, it's good. I mean, we're at 50% capacity. We have like 40 seats total between inside and outside. Our legal capacity is like 132, I think. So we're actually way under 50%. But yeah, we're doing well, and it's safe. And I think that's the biggest merger that I can ask for. It's not panic mode and not plandemic, nothing's real, take off your mask. Like legally, if you come into King State and you're not outside, you have to wear a mask. If you just need to use the restroom, you have to wear a mask. You know, the second you get to your seat, you can take it off. If you want to go get a drink of water, you have to put on your mask. And everyone's, you know, bitching about those rules. Right. And as pedestrian and petty as they are, because what's the difference? Like the rules are the rules. So everyone's been really, really cool, at least in our circle of King State, being very respectful. We have a few bad apples, but everyone does.
Well, you have some people that freak out at the door when you tell them to put on a mask, like you see on Facebook.
Oh yeah. I mean, nothing like world star hip hop worthy, but definitely like, you know, we have a dude come in and we're like, man, you need a mask. He's like, why do I need a mask? And it's because one, there's a thing that's killing hundreds of thousands of people. And two, because we will get shut down if you're caught in here without a mask. And then he wants to dialogue about politics. And it's like, I don't care who you voted for. I don't care what website you read. Like, you can't be in here without a mask. It's not even my decision. I'm just enforcing it. And, you know, be safe. I've always been safe. You're safe too. We all need to wake up. We're all on this planet for a reason. You get these like weird guys and you're just like, dude, nobody needs that right now. Like, just if you don't want a coffee here, go try to get a coffee anywhere else without a mask and you're going to get shut down too. Like, play by the rules. You can't leave your house and go into an establishment that serves food or beverage and not have a mask. Like, why are we still dealing with this? Like 4 or 5 months later,
right?
You know? And that's just, you know, Florida for you. But overall, I mean, everyone's been really cool. And, you know, we've been able to dynamically shift and we have a really good, you know, customer base. And I think our neighborhood and our community really cares. So they've really poured into us even when it's to go and it's not as fresh, not as good, not as fun. You know, a lot of people came out. So we're popping out the other end right now going into quarter four pretty good. So
that's
it's been wild.
In the beginning, though, was there a time where you're like, oh, shit, we might be screwed? Or, I mean, just because I
was 100%.
Thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when all of your friends, and so, you know, a lot of our friends, like even our old merch guy, Taylor, he owns a sports bar in town. And it's like all of our friends that we grew up with touring or playing in bands or going to shows with, we've all found ourselves as like bar owners or restaurant owners or coffee shop owners. And all of a sudden we're all shut down. And yeah. So it's not just me. It's like all of my homies, similar to touring. It's like, we're not shut down. Emery's shut down. Freaking A Day to Remember shut down, all the way up to Foo Fighters are shut down. Like, what are we all going to do? And there's a universal widespread panic. So it was definitely scary. And then I think a lot of people panicked, shut down, tried to just cut off all payroll, fired everyone, kind of hunkered down. And then there's a few businesses that were more proactive and were like, okay, so in this world, what can we do that is one, safe, two, compliant with the law, three, ideally more compliant with the law because the laws are a little vague, and then four, profitable or at least sustainable just to break even and weather a storm. And there, the handful of those people that, you know, I've been dialoguing with, you know, all the way from fine dining down to coffee and bagel shops and bars and everything in between, like we were all trading secrets and not trade secrets, but more concepts and, you know, theories and ideas. And we started deploying these special nights and this, that, and the other, and it's all to go and it's all social distance or whatever. And it's like, when you got the people that really wanted to work and were willing to be dynamic, you started seeing this new growth of what this was. Mm-hmm. And it's like, let's not build a business for 3 months. Let's build a business as if COVID's never going away. Because when it does, we're just better off.
It's not really going to go away anyway. Is it going away?
But I think everyone's like, oh, by January. And originally it was like, we're going to shut down May 1st. Yeah. By July, we'll all be touring. Right. Restaurants will be open. And it's like, when that started happening, we're like, let's build a business model that can get us through the entire year. And what if it never really goes back and we're always at 50% capacity? So what we're doing now is like, we have 50%. What if 100% never comes back? Let's build a business model now that allows us to thrive for 2 or 3 years like this. And no doubt. There's a few businesses and bands that are doing that. And then there's a bunch of other businesses and bands that are just tweeting angrily, mad at the world, as if, like, the world controls science and controls multiple thousands of people dying every day.
Right? Yeah, that's the two main kind of people. The way I'm seeing it break down is, and I think it's given way slowly, but it was a pretty distinct thing where you know somebody's in a mindset of, well, this will be over soon. So, and sometimes there's the people that take the more extreme.
100%.
There's two versions of it. There's the people who want it to be over soon and are extra cautious, like the people that still aren't leaving their house or whatever, you know, like there's that. And then there's the people that just want it to be over soon because it's made up, but they think it's going to be over soon. They're both, both versions are people who are not dealing with reality. Those are both ways of not dealing with reality, you know?
Correct. And then and what's interesting is like what I've seen mostly in Florida, because we are an older age bracket in a state, is like a lot of the people that are 50 and 60 plus are more Fox News, plandemic, you know, this is a conspiracy. And so you see a lot of the people that are most negligible about the laws and the science being the people that were all shut down to protect. And so now you're met with another challenge of going, you know, but mom, dad, grandma, whoever those people are, like, you can't just act like this doesn't exist, because I have 15 friends that own businesses that are shut down and our bands can't tour because we're trying to protect people that are 65, 70 and older with pre-existing conditions, and it will actually kill you. And it's proven 100,000 times over. And so it's interesting to kind of take all of that. You have the pandemic people, you have the people that are just like, I'm so sick of this, when is it going to be over? All the way down to people that are like, it just doesn't exist. And like, we're being manipulated. And all of those things may be true, theoretically.
They're all right about something. Everybody's right about something, you know?
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of not writing someone off as in 100% wrong and I'm 100% right. But the reality is, nobody knows what's right. So let's err on the side of protection. And at least when there's laws, that are mandated to create a downturn of infections and deaths so that other people's businesses can open and other kids can be fed. And now we're talking about other kids having Christmas presents. Like, let's all play our part, because it's not about you and what you think and what you read and what website you went to or what newscaster you looked at. Like, it's about all of us as a state, as a community, rallying around each other, because you may not care, but when you don't care and you give it to five other people, and then those five people give it to 10 other people, and now there's 50 more, which turns into 2,500 more in 3 weeks. Like, you just kick a lot of people's cans down the curb. And it's like, you're constantly moving the goalposts for people that are out of work, are losing their bars. And we've had a lot of bars that are just done. There's a bar down the street that's bar restaurant open for lease. Like, they're gone, they're done. Wow. And so it's like, so many people have lost their businesses, and there's a lot of venues in Florida that are about to lose their venues. And that's the whole NEMA thing, or NEVA. And it's like, there's so many causes that are affected by this. And it's like, even if you know for a fact in your heart that it isn't real, just play along so that everyone can at least get their job back. Yeah. And then you could bitch on Twitter about how you were hoaxed and we're all idiots or we're all puppets. Like, whatever your gimmick is, like, let that be your position. I don't want to come against that, but like, do that in compliance, because there's kids that aren't going to have Christmas this year. Yeah. I think, you know, there's families that can't pay their rent, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think what happened is, the way I look at it now, and correct me if I'm wrong, if y'all come down any differently, but they had to scare people. That was necessary early on because they didn't know how bad it was going to be. This virus turned out not to be as bad as we got lucky. Basically.
Correct.
Like, this could have been,
even though there's still tons of, yeah, it could have been way worse. Even there's still lots of death, obviously. But
I mean, it could have been worse, and it just in some just totally crazy ways. And so when that uncertainty is there, the right thing to do is what will later seem like an overreaction. But they knew that they were going to scare people and it was going to have all these bad effects, but it just, we had to kind of get into that mode, and then we did get lucky, and so now we have to undo some of that fear, which is challenging, and at the same time we still have to deal with this virus not being, which is very bad still, but not near as bad as it could have been. But now we're in a situation where it has nothing to do with the 2 weeks or the this or that, and we, it's also true that we are dealing with it worse than any other country, so all of those things true at the same time is a weird position. But it's also probably true, I'll add a couple more things to people's thinking that you can kind of go with here. It's probably not going away really at any point. So we're just going to move on from here. And then we'll eventually there'll be less cases of it, or we'll reach some herd immunity, but it'll be around for many, many years. And your behavior will be altered as long as you're worried about it. Even many years from now, the vaccine is kind of, I feel maybe the vaccine is like a symbolic hope to some degree, not a fix for anything. You know, I have extreme doubts that even if one gets made, it can be produced and distributed and accepted by enough people to make, you know, a night and day difference. Although it will, it'll shave down. It'll improve the situation when some people get a vaccine somewhere. But I believe that global distribution of a chemical that doesn't exist yet is a bigger challenge than people might think. So we'll see what happens, you know. But and so then your choices of behavior, and I want to talk about the music business and stuff too, because I'm not sure where to go. I want your brain on this, Tim, is what I really want to talk about. But you're now living in a world that will continue to have COVID and will continue to have influenza and the common cold. They will all be here, and you'll get them all sometimes in your life. So now you need to act accordingly.
Yeah.
I try not to get the flu. I will get the flu. I try not to get COVID. I will get COVID.
Right.
Now, the fact that it's a novel virus means you're much more likely to get COVID than the flu over the next 10 years. If you said, which one am I more likely to get? Obviously, COVID is more contagious and it's not going away. And you have no immunity until you get it, or maybe a vaccine, but that's just not that. It's not going to change things that much. So if you wouldn't get on an airplane to
go ahead. I was going to say, the problem there, though, is that the reason you're not scared of the flu is because it's just been around for a long time.
Right. You'll eventually not be scared of COVID. You'll just say,
like, Georgia won't wake up going, oh my God, COVID's breaking out this summer.
Right.
Like, Georgia, go, shit, kids, I got sick.
Toby, your kids.
But,
it's like,
yesterday.
He got COVID.
Yesterday, I saw a guy coming down the street towards me out in the middle of nowhere with no one around him, and he had a mask on. And I was like, doesn't he understand? And here's why it was so funny. He was on a scooter going 35 miles an hour. he was by himself on a scooter wearing a mask. Right. I was like, you ain't getting COVID, dude.
Yeah, but 9 years from now, it'll be the same is what I'm saying. So whatever you're doing right now to be super careful, are you going to lock that in for the decade?
Yeah, forever.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Make your choices. Right. Like, you can avoid getting COVID for the next 6 months if you don't leave your house, sure. Or the next 10 years if you don't leave your house. That'll be up to you. If you don't want to get it, you'll have to continue the behaviors you're doing now. Otherwise, you probably get it.
Right.
It's just a matter of what year, what fall do you get it?
So what are your thoughts on that? Because I'm with Matt on that, and it's like, you know, going back to like everyone, plandemic, politicized, BS, fake news, all the way down to like, no mask, you're a murderer. Like, everyone in those arguments of extremes does have an ounce of truth in all of it. Mm-hmm. And nobody's 100% right and nobody's 100% wrong. So in my head, my question to me and also like you guys, because we're talking, is like, what once all the dust settles and the other foot drops will be reasonably expected in perpetuity? Like, is it like, yo, just wear a mask inside forever? Or is the mask thing like a gimmick or a trend that will go away? Or is it like, maybe there's hand sanitizer at every music venue forever? Mm-hmm. But, or is that a trend? And obviously, as science comes out, like, that will dictate that. But assuming no new science comes out and these are the things that save everything, mm-hmm. you know, what, like you said, Matt, like, lock it in? Or is it just,
well, it's gonna,
when somebody says it's all good, we'll just go back to our normal
there's no green light. There's no green light. There's just less yellow light from red to yellow slower. I mean, it'll be statistical improvement and we'll get better medical intervention. So less people will die that get it. Less people will get it. There'll be herd immunity. There'll be some vaccine. There'll be some better best practices. But the reality is, in the same way that TSA is permanent, COVID precautions are permanent. And to some degree, they'll change policy. Oh, you leave your shoes on. Okay. I mean, whatever. It's like the and it is security theater. And here's the great part. I guess we need security theater. We have TSA still for some actual reason, not for no reason. I mean, it is stupid, but it's not for no reason. It's both. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's peace of mind.
We need to feel safe. Correct. You know, like, I'm working with a preschool co-op that my daughter goes to, and my gosh, you can't believe how tense it is and how, I mean, that you know, the vibe there and the risk management is like out of a movie. Like, it's everybody's very serious and scared in ways that are very overkill, and that's harmful. And so to the point where it's like, wait a minute, this might not be good for the kids to be in this high tension environment with all these precautions. Like, it might not even be good for early child development to have this amount of face shields and protocols, and the parents can't, like, it's damaging to be safe, to be overly safe. It is. We know it is. And there's people that will feel better just because they're being scared and putting their fear, anxiety into some action that doesn't do anything. But just like the drinking thing, you got to do something to deal with that anxiety. And so one of the things we do is be overly safe, which if we do it too much is really damaging. You know, nobody likes the TSA. It is, you know, but you
have
them.
The problem is, once you instill that, you can't go back. You can't just go, okay, we're ending TSA, because now you have, terrorism created an unbelievable workforce for people, right? Like, I mean, TSA employs how many people? And you just go, we don't need it anymore. And then as soon as you say you don't need it anymore, somebody will do something stupid. And then you'll be in trouble. So it's
but
just
then you
there.
Just say, what about the kids? Or what happens if, like, then there's blame. Like, if you remove a security precaution and something happens, which it was going to happen anyway, and it would have happened if there was never security precautions, but there's a person or a group who advocates for the less security, which is not a comfortable position. It's not one anybody likes to vote for or advocate or speak up about, that this safety precaution is both unnecessary and harmful, because it's like, yeah, but what if something bad happens? Yeah, I guess you're right. What about the kids? I don't know. What if a kid, I don't know. What if a terrorist comes? I don't know. So I guess leave everything on the maximum security
on
forever.
10.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm in a weird spot right now. They just sent out, so our school district, we're doing virtual learning, and they just sent out a survey to say who would send your kids back to school. And we immediately said yes. We just said yes. We want, like, it's really funny. My daughter sounds like a stay-at-home mom that's been a stay-at-home mom for like 10 years. She's like, I just need to be around adults again. Our daughter, our oldest, she's in fifth grade. She goes, I just need to be around fifth graders again. I just need some.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just like, whoa. And she's right, though. She's not. I mean, she's saying something that's true. She needs to be the interaction with other humans or else her life isn't right. It's not normal. She needs it or something like that. So we said yes immediately. And I was like, I'm not that worried about our kids getting COVID. They might bring it to us and Jess and I could die. Like I'm 44, so I have the most chance of getting COVID and dying in my family. But I'm willing to risk it. I'm willing to risk it because there has to be some normalcy. I feel like because of the safety precautions. Think about this. How many times did you hear about ventilators and ventilation? You're going to be, and now that's kind of gone away, right? How much are you hearing about ventilators these days?
They decided not that it's actually
it's
a lot
worse for you, right?
Worse. They decided it was pretty harmful. It was linked to more mortality.
That's what I'm saying. So doctors and people are making mistakes, trying to do the right thing. I'm not blaming them, but I'm saying they were trying to do the right thing. But you heard all this stuff. You're going to be on a ventilator, and this is going to be you're not going to make. And then all of a sudden, it gets a little bit less, and then you start hearing numbers, and nobody wants to really recognize the numbers
I
think the NFL just came back and zero people have COVID in all of the NFL. Now, that's going to change, and then you'll go, see? But if you just go, yeah, but like you just said, Matt, we've got to live with it. People are going to get it, and you just have to make adjustments. Maybe NFL rosters have a bigger roster instead of 54 or something like that. Maybe they have 74 because some people are going to get sick or whatever. But, I mean, Russell Westbrook in the NBA plays for the Houston Rockets. He had COVID, and he was back playing in NBA immediate. It was within 2 weeks of getting it, right? 2 or 3 weeks of getting it and playing at a high level athletically, but then went out because of a quad injury. The quad injury was worse almost than the COVID. And I was like, that's so funny. Like, I mean, there's always something that's going to get you. And I don't want to diminish how it's scary and I want my kids to be safe and all that. But at the same time, like a guy riding by with a mask on a scooter, I'm just like, what? Is that made me think
that's
the end of the
prison.
World. Going back to what Tim said, there's no that is the worst thing I think about Trump. There isn't somebody in leadership going, hey, this is what we got to do. Listen, like you said, you said it so clearly a minute ago, Tim. Hey, listen, these are the rules. Just wear a mask, dude. If we all just do this, it's going to make everything so much smoother. Let's just do it. Hey, when you're in TSA line, just take off your damn shoes and your belt. Why do you got to? Come on. Yeah. What are you going to go? Just do it so you help everybody else. Help out everybody. Why do you have to be that? That liberty, it seems so selfish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And I think, like, for me, even talking to Matt's point about the development and the kids and everyone just kind of being, scared and or stunted on general growth. Like one of my friends, Jonathan, owns a coffee shop in Tampa called Elevation, and he has one kid, and I think his daughter's like 10 or 12, and she's doing virtual learning because all the schools are shut down within reason here. And I don't know if it's an option or not because we homeschool, so I'm not really caught up to that. But like, I went in and he's like, dude, this virtual learning is like killing me. It's great. And I get to spend time with my daughter, but I have to work. He just opened his shop like a year ago, not even. And she was in there and she's just this little girl. She's got her little Topo Chico from her dad's shop. She's on her laptop. She's listening to music. There's no teacher. And I thought she was going to be like, this is sick. And I talked to her. I was like, is it so cool to be doing school like in your dad's coffee shop? Like there's no rules. You can go to the bathroom whenever you want. You don't have to like, you could take a break. And she just said exactly what you guys were talking about. She's like, no, like, I just want to be back with my classmates. Like I need my peers. I need kids like me. I want to live my life. And like, dad doesn't want to talk about Pokemon or whatever kids are into. And it's like the same way we need to like get out of our bubble and be like, dude, I've been with my kids and my wife for 3 months. Like, I just want to see dudes and grab a beer and like talk about sports or finances or business or anything. There was this like obvious tension with her, and not destructive, but you know, when positioned, she's like, yeah, I'd really like to just be back in school. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what kid wants to be back in school? Like, how weird is that?
Right.
Yeah, you know, I remember being in school going, I hate this place.
Right.
I never want to be back here. And yeah. Kids are like, can we please just go back to school?
Please give it back.
And that's just wild to me, you know? Yeah,
absolutely. So how about music business though? What are we going to do? Where are we headed? You guys have, I mean, your streaming thing was quite the big event, and I didn't get numbers on it or anything like that, but I got a grip on how significant of a I don't know if that's you see that as a one-time thing or how you do on that, but it was quite successful, and everybody's very impressed with what y'all were able to do. But how do you see that, and then long-term, where this is going?
Oh, man. Well, music industry long-term, I think we'll be back. I think, you know, April at the earliest, but by end of next year, I think people are going to have to, given even the arguments we've talked about here, like, are we going to realize that this is here forever and just go back to normal, or at least some sort of normal? Or are we just going to stay shut in forever until there's zero cases? Because if we go back to like the flu or anything else, like if we said flu season's coming, everyone go shut their doors, get in their, you know, bomb chambers, like nothing would ever move. So I think we will get there as new data, better press, like more like logical data-driven science comes out that isn't skewed, which is going to be really hard. I think that's the biggest hurdle we all have, is we're so politicized left and right. Right, it doesn't exist. It's scam. Left, it's going to kill everyone. Once everyone kind of goes left and right center, and you can swing hard left center or right center as you want, but as long as you're tethered somewhere to the center, I think that people are just going to have to go back to work. You know, and
right,
I think
but there's a big difference in a coffee shop and then to a bar to 100% capacity seating, to a jazz club with people watching, to a, you know, seated concert. I mean, but a mosh pit, there's literally nothing that would open after a mosh pit. I mean, a mosh pit is the last possible thing that would yes. require absolutely no restrictions, no precautions are required before there is a mosh pit, right? Like it Correct. Has to go all the way to no restrictions before there could be a mosh pit.
I think it has to. And I think it might take, I mean, let's say it even takes 10 years, but it's like, you know what I mean? It will happen. I mean, when was the last time someone thought about like, yo, before you mosh, like make sure you're not HIV positive, you know, like
right.
There's so many things that are in a mosh pit. It's like, you know, blood, transmitted diseases, all this stuff. Like a guy got his nose broken, he bled all over me. It's like, there is a piece with that. And this is just a new thing. So I think it will come back. I think that might be an extreme example, but I think overall, what we're going to see is certain states, unless there's a presidential law, which there seems to not be, and I don't think that's coming ever anytime soon, you know, November asterisk there. It's like when it's left to a state-to-state legislation, like there's going to be, there's comedy clubs opening right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I listen to Joe Rogan a lot. It's like, oh, we can go to Houston and literally do a comedy club. And then there's like people in LA who's like, I can barely open my restaurant unless I have an outdoor patio. So right. I think it's going to go state by state. And I think there's going to be certain states that open up earlier. And I think those states are actually going to win quicker. You know, credit to Elon Musk on his thoughts on that. And it's like, that's where I go back. Right is like, hopefully right center is not just like, screw all this, but there's a certain point where it's like, this is America and everyone should have the freedom to do whatever they want, you know? And when you're positioned with everyone has to shut down to protect these people, what that does is it pits the people that are shut down against the people they're trying to protect who don't respect any of it. But if it's a scenario of, if you're at risk, if you're over 50, if you happen to be 44 and the lead singer of Emery, please don't go out because you're going to die.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm dead.
But if you're 37 and you're just a guitar player of Under Oath, like, go nuts because you're healthy as a horse.
We're going to get Toby a plexiglass drummer church cage.
Yeah, yeah.
So for the, it'll keep him from falling off the stage.
Falling off the stage.
And the, you know, it'll be disease proof. So
And he'll be droplet free.
Yeah, that risk.
But yeah, all of that. So I think I really think we're going to get back to music next year somehow. And
but
honestly,
with space, like without. But I mean, my real question there is: yes, I believe in six. Which another 6 months is way longer than we all thought 6 months ago or 3 months ago. Probably,
but it's more reasonable to say 6 months.
But even when that happens, it of course it won't be wide open. So what I'm most curious about is, even when you can have something that's like a concert, it still might not have the mosh pit. And I'm wondering, like, how will that change the medium or the art form to not have that intensity energy at the front of the stage? Like, think of all the concerts you've played where everybody come to the front so that we can have a show. Now, imagine the opposite of that. Like, okay, we're about to do a show. Make sure everybody spread out. Like, that's not the same event anymore. It never can be.
Agreed. And so, I think it won't be for a minute, but I look at it from, you know, an entrepreneurial perspective, and the white space I see that nobody's thinking about is Under Oath can draw what, 2,000 to 3,000 people on any given night with the right package. Most small scale arenas are 5,000 to 7,000. So if the rule is 50% capacity, then what we do normally on tour can now sell out arenas. And I want 2021 to be Under Oath sells out an arena tour for the first time in their lives, because only half the people can be there. And so I'm making lemonade out of lemons over here, boys. But
we're going to start selling out House of Blues when they get down to 25% capacity. Yeah, like, I know it.
Emery sells out the Shrine, 2,000 people in a 5,000 cap room. It's great. We're going to have the biggest shows of our lives next year. And that's what I'm excited about. You know, we're going to be on Billboard. We're going to be on everything. Polestar.
Those venues will have to charge less too, right? Like, you'll probably get the venues for a better deal.
You got to charge double to make that work.
Well, do you know how hard Post Malone worked to sell an arena 3 years ago? And all we have to do is show up because half the seats aren't even available.
Half the money, my friend, and double the expenses.
Oh, no, don't worry about that. Like, the business is totally screwed. No, I mean, in all seriousness, yeah, I don't really know, but I do think for me, logically, you're going to get to smaller places that are more intimate, which I think maybe you then charge more because they're more exclusive, because you can't, like, in a reality, like, to rent out an arena is so expensive. Like, 2,500 people coming into an arena can't even pay for that arena at a $30 ticket, you know, let alone make the tour package any money to make it worth coming there. So I think for me, we're going to move into a hybrid of something. And I don't know what that something is, but I was having a talk with one of our local club owners who owns a 400 cap room where we actually played the Under Oath secret show when we got back together, Crowbar, Tom. And, you know, he's like, dude, I can only be at 50% capacity. I can fit 100 people in this place, socially distanced. I have a patio. I can maybe fit another 50 people there, but then I have to have a doorman. And it's like, but dude, if you bring in bands and it's a completely different experience, granted, like Matt, to your point, mosh pits, I'm like, Under Oath's not the band. We can't play your club until it's 100% stage dives, crowd surfs, whole nine yards. But aside from our niche industry, like, there is a white space for, you know, country, folk, Sufjan Stevens, indie bands to play these seated, intimate venues. And if they're not seated, like bleacher seating that can't be moved, like, create a different experience like a jazz club in the House of Blues, to where I could see the National with my wife and two people at my own table. And yeah, it's $85 instead of $25. But with that becomes a new experience. And tell me why that extra $65 is worth it. And if you can fill that gap, you're going to make the same money with less people.
Yeah,
because I'm so ready to see a concert. I will pay triple right now to see E-Tid all the way to Drake, to Post Malone, to Kendrick, to Radiohead. Like, what is the cost? Tell me I'm safe. And right. what do I get for being overcharged, knowing the metrics of how a deal's worked? If you can answer those questions, I'm in. And I would argue a general music fan who doesn't know the metrics doesn't care the cost. They're not wondering like, well, last year and 3 years ago, based on the touring cycle, I paid $48 and now it's $78. Mm-hmm. It's just $78 to see the first show to your favorite band in right. 3 years. Like, why would you not pay that?
I'm optimistic about that for several reasons. One is we went out for our anniversary this week and it was like, oh, yeah, yeah, we're going to actually go out to a restaurant because we used to go out to eat all the time. And now we almost never go out to eat. And so it was our anniversary. So, yeah, we should just go out to eat. And you can't believe how much I didn't think about what it could have ever cost. Like, you don't even know right. how that didn't enter into it for me. We spent $180 and it was pretty good. And we went to a good steakhouse, you know, and I could never have thought about that. But normally when I eat out several times a week, and so if shows are that way, that's good. It also means that probably a lot of bands, like if you think of the time that we got into touring, it was when you go, oh, anybody with a van and a guitar can just drive somewhere and probably get a show. We were on the leading edge of like, you can just make your own luck and do some shit and you can be touring. And correct. Then after that, it became a bigger thing and more people until the thing was totally flooded at some point with a bunch of local bands and small touring bands and shows every night in every club everywhere forever. And that got really competitive. But I mean, that isn't going to be that much around anymore. You know, there's got to, that it has to squeeze out a lot of, I mean, for whatever reason, I'm not trying to, I don't know, but there's a lot of bands that'll be squeezed out of this. It's not worth doing. And,
correct.
And so there'll be less competition if we can throw a good show at a good quality, but it will be different because the stage diving is not, I mean, even when we're back, it's not going to be that. I love Crowbar. We played a sold out show there last year. It was unbelievable. If it was 100 people there, I can't say that there would be even a point to do
that. As our full
though.
Band, so you're right.
I'm a little lost on that, you know, and that's like a classic 70s club with a big PA and it's dirty and there's a bar. And I'm just thinking, is there a new, I mean, venues are going to close down. So is there some whole new experience to create and what is it?
But that's what's really neat. Yeah, that's what's really neat. I was going to say, going back to what Tim said, you're right. This is where we are at now, which is even going back to like Elon Musk or, you know, you were saying Joe Rogan who just moved to Austin or whatever. This is the time for innovation. So if a band can say, hey, look, this is what you actually get. Like maybe going and seeing a band at your own table might be a better experience. In the future, you know what I mean? Like maybe you can create an environment that is more fun, that is open to a lot of stuff. The question I wanted to ask Tim was, y'all did your three albums back to back and played that, I guess you would call it virtually, but it's y'all playing live, and that offered a lot of value to people, ton of value to people. So much so that, I mean, y'all made a shitload of money. You did really good. I don't know how much. I don't know any numbers or details, but I think y'all, I heard people talking about it. They said y'all did really good, which is so awesome. What I'm saying is that's amazing. Like y'all innovated and did something that nobody else was doing and created an experience for people trapped at home. And you gave the people something. It wasn't just Under Oath playing. You came to them. You stepped out of your box and did something. I'm wondering if that virtual component, I mean, did y'all really enjoy it? What was the feedback for you guys? Yeah. What did it feel weird playing a live show like that?
Yeah. I mean, I'll answer that in a second because I think Matt brought up a lot of things and he's talking about bands. There's going to be a lot of bands that get squeezed out of this concept of like higher ticket values, higher experience. And it's similar to bars and restaurants. Like in Tampa, there's a lot of bars and restaurants that won't make it. And like my goal isn't for them to not make it.
Right.
But I think what we're naturally seeing is if you build a system that only works within a system that is 100 years old and it can't ever change for your system and model to work, when it does, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. And the same way I was going back to like, at first, all the bars and restaurants, we were all texting each other. And then there's this like group of agile, creative people going, let's build businesses that last longer, no matter what the world or science or sickness throws at us. And how do we navigate that, especially in the food and beverage industry? That's the hardest, you know, probably second to the entertainment industry, because I can't live stream an egg and cheese biscuit sandwich to Toby for $5, right. You know,
yet,
yet. I'm yet. Working on that. Me and Elon are talking, but regardless, like that same mindset has to be biopsied and then implanted into the entertainment industry. And I think what's going to happen is you will see a lot of bands, like, you know, like Matt said, our dreams are our dreams, and we save up money and borrow $500 from our parents, put a down payment on a van. And it's like, we're chasing the dream. That's similar to like those old LA movies on like, yeah, I just moved to LA with like a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of vodka and an old beat up Ford Bronco. And now I'm Iron Man. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. LA is so network, nepotism, connection based. Like, those stories are not as they were when it was getting its footing. And like with our industry, we're now in a spot where, yeah, if you're trying to start a band right now and it's the pandemic, you're probably not in a good spot. But if you have a brand of value that has a following that trusts you, and you always bring more value than you ask a fan or a supporter to give monetarily, you are in actually a really, really healthy spot. It's just going to look different in the coming years. And so I think you're right. Bars are going to shut down and they're never going to come back. Bands are going to be here and they're never going to come back. And the bands and the bars that actually all rise to the top, weather a storm and come out even better, are the ones that have, one, quality, two, a real following and support, and three, like the agility to be able to transform, which goes to the live stream thing, you know. And, you know, Nate, actually, from Amber Lynn, the drummer, my brother-in-law and partner in King State, did a live stream first. And he was like, dude, our live stream went really well. You guys should really pay attention to this. And I think we got a lot of press, like we invented and or changed the live stream game, and maybe we changed it, but we didn't invent it. Like, I was literally at our bar and Nate's like, dude, you have to look at this. And I started looking at it more, and in my head, like going back to Matt's, like, there's no mosh pits. Like, when is Emery or Under Oath ever going to be able to do anything again? You know, to go from, yeah, we could play in front of 200 people in a 400 cap room. That doesn't make sense. Like, imagine taking that and going, let's play in front of nobody and have it be on the internet. Right. That's even worse, theoretically, until you fix it.
Until you fix it. That's right.
So like,
so what did it feel like then? What needs to be fixed from your point of view? And like, I know it went great and all that, but feel free to tell me how much it wasn't fun and how are we going to fix it? Where are we going to go from there?
Sure. So the idea was three records in a row, and we started with Lost in the Sound first, and then Define the Great Line, and then Chasing Safety, because we didn't want to start with our biggest record first, because we thought there was going to be a lot of R&D and a lot of issues. And what we wanted to do is, you know, similar to, you don't play LA or New York on day one of a tour because you're rusty, you want to get the kinks out, you want to make sure the lights are firing. So we kind of staggered it that way from a business standpoint, as well as like, we're going to test the waters with a record that quote unquote isn't in as much demand as the other two, thinking that if we started as some sort of like a steamroll and, you know, a ball rolling downhill, by the time it got to the bottom towards the last few records, like it would be at maximum speed.
Yeah.
What we found was after night one, we watched the tape back and we were like, we don't really have any notes. Like in my head, we play Lost in the Sound of Separation. We figure out what we fucked up. And then next week is all course correction, fixing this, fixing that. And instead, the whole next week was, how do we beat last week? Like, we just did it. And from a performance level, being lighting, time code lights, you know, performance, cues, editing, camera, how does the stream look? Like, we've never done this. So let's not risk something super massive on something we've never done before, because there's no data. You know, Amber Lynn's done a stream, Dashboard did a stream, like a few people have done Facebook live streams, but those don't count. Like, there's, I can count on two hands how many people have done streams. you know, we're in a tour. It's like, should we go to Crowbar or State Theater in Tampa, 400 or 750? Like, you have an analysis because your agent has booked 90 shows there in the last 5 years, and he knows what the market says. This is a brand new market. It's a brand new market. It's a brand new medium. So like, there's no blueprint. So we're flying by the seat of our pants. So we did the first show and it went well. And then the next two shows were just adding. And I think the biggest thing, going back to Matt's question, was like, what do you change? What's difficult about it? Like, until you fix it, like, what do you fix? For us, all of the live streams we've seen up until now, including until now, have been forward facing. It's me looking at a screen, and it's an idea of like, I'm in the crowd from my laptop, and I see 12 feet of space, a stage, and then lights, and then the band facing forward. And I feel like what that does to the psyche is exactly what Matt's saying. It robs you of something and shows you how much you're not part of anything.
Right, right.
So Tension Division and Randy, our manager, and myself and our team decided to figure out a way to, again, going back to the bottle service, I'll pay more if you give me something more, even though you're taking something away from me. It's like, how do we take that model to the live stream? And it's like, you're not watching a show. Because if you're watching us all playing and it's me and then Chris behind me and Aaron in the middle, like, you're just going, I just want to be there and I can't. And now it's pissing me off more than it's helping me.
Yeah.
So we built it in the round. And this was an idea of, we're going to take away the fact that you can't be in the front row. There's no VIP seating. There's no like bird's eye view shot from the balcony at House of Blues. But what you're going to gain instead is a direct link to Spencer, Aaron, Chris, myself, Grant, and James. And you're going to see that drum fill played this big, if you have a 75-inch TV, closer than you've ever seen it. And so the goal was to not try to create like, we're going to put a camera here and you're the audience member and we're way up here. It's like, no, you're on stage with us and you rarely see the full band ever. And it's more of an immersive experience, and more like similar to like Vice gets embedded with ISIS and you're like, bullshit. And you see it and you're like, what the fuck? You know, like, these things were more of what we pulled from than like, well, what would Trent Reznor do? And how did so-and-so do it? Cause nobody's doing it yet. And so it's like, we want people to feel like they're in this battlefield with us, so that now it's in the round. And so aside from a few intentional camera shots, nothing leaves the round. You are on stage with us. You're not outside of it wishing that you were there. You are hoping that we never come to play your city again because this was the best seat you've ever had.
Yeah. That and reminds me of the football, basically, because you've seen all the sports have been doing. You see baseball with the cardboard cutouts, and that's like the old. That's like a stream where you watch the band from stage. You're like, yeah, I get it
for sure.
It's kind of, but this football thing in the last couple of weeks, I've been just so blown away by the telecast production that they've been able to pull off. Football feels pretty real, and it's because of the exact same things. Football is tight camera angles, way in there. They spend a lot of time on the broadcast and the energy of the people talking.
100%. Like
they it's a production, that football broadcast,
yes,
versus what the other sports are don't quite have that. And so what you're describing there is, yeah, you get up close, you have the helmet cam, you have what are the, and so the, you know, football's had less and less people attending, and it's gotten to where the broadcast is better than the live experience. Is such a thing possible for music? People
for
go,
sure.
Oh, it's not the same. But they used to say that. Everybody used to say that about football games. It'll never be as good on your TV. Remember 1987 when you watched football? It wasn't as good as going to a football game. Now,
it's
many
better.
People yeah. think it's better. And there's all the naysayers back then. So you tell me, what do we got to do?
100%. I mean, even with the fly cams, and like, so football has a different experience because they have Madden. And Madden is so big that when you give me the Madden perspective and it looks like I'm watching it from the snap from a fly cam, all of a sudden I have, like, Madden basically told me as a football lover what I want to see. And when I'm in the nosebleeds for $85 paying $12 a hot dog, I can't see anything. And so for me, like, even the last 5 years, I've been to a few football games and it's like, I'd rather watch it at home because they've gotten so good.
Yeah.
And you know, regionally, that might not be a good play. But when you're talking about globally for an artist, that's a great play because now you can put people in Australia and Europe and Canada and South America all in the best position. And something for me that we've really delved into as a band, and you guys have dealt with this too, is like Emery's US tour. You have a bus, you have six crew members, you have a lighting package, and your LA show and your Tampa show and your Orlando show and your New York show are great. And then you get asked to go to Europe. And all of a sudden, what happens? Everything shrinks, and all these kids are watching your Instagram and your live videos and your YouTube clips from your US show. And they go, oh my God, I can't wait to see Emery. Like, you know, Matt jumped off the light wall and this and that and the other. And guess what they see? House lights in a divey club. Why? Because the metrics don't extrapolate consistently across every region and every continent. And so something I'm really excited about was with the observatory, we were able to give people in Australia, China, Japan, Brazil, that we haven't even been to in like 12 years, 15 years, a show that's better than we could ever give them in person.
Right.
Because the metrics don't work for us to be able to have lights and strobes and time code and crews and changeovers. It's like you have the ideal thing in the US or whatever your biggest market is, and then you pare it down for every region based on what they can afford to bring you over for. Mm-hmm. And I can't fly over a semi truck full of light walls to Australia, but Australian people deserve the same show that they get in the US. And so what I've seen similar to football is like, we can service the people that have to be here now, but I think what's going to happen long-term for me and for us, at least ideally, is we're trying to build Under Oath Observatory as a mobile rig, so that when we do that one show, like, you know, last year or 2 years ago, we sold out our biggest show. It was the USF Sundome, 5,000 people sold out. It was us, Amber Lynn, on our Erase Me tour. And it was, you know, end of year. And it was the biggest show ever. And we brought in more production than we had the whole tour. And then we had Amber Lynn there. And that was a new thing. And two hometown people came and just created this monster show. And nobody will ever experience that show aside from the 5,000 people that were there.
Yeah, it can't. Yeah.
I don't want that to ever be the case again. I want our best show to be able to be experienced anywhere with better access in Australia, Japan, New Zealand, Europe, UK, Mexico, anywhere else. And so now what you have is this mixed medium of live and technically live,
mixed,
but not experienced live. And it is all real time. Mm-hmm. And so now what you can do is you can build this entire music economy around a web address. And if you have enough bandwidth to stream it in real time at 24p in HD. And so I think a lot of people are looking at live streams as like a plug. It's a bridge. It's going to get us to touring next year. But just like King State, we're building this to be a long-term solution to where if there's only 10 states next year that allow live shows and we feel it's safe enough to go, we will do a 10-show tour and we will live stream two or three of the biggest shows. And it will be something that is bigger than if we went out for 40 days.
That's
and so
great.
It's like, so I don't have all the answers right now, but I think to Matt's question, all of this is broken and who's going to fix it? And in my head, nobody's going to fix it but me. And in Randy's head, nobody's going to fix it but Randy. And in Joel Cook and Brandon Reich's head from Tension, nobody's going to fix it but us. So we have a bunch of fixers. And so our goal is to just go, what are our limitations? Just be clear about that. We'll figure out a way around it. And we won't build substantial, stable business. We'll build a bigger business. Our live stream was supposed to just fill the gap from the Slipknot tour that we were supposed to be on all summer. And that was devastating. Like, we were going to play Madison Square Garden for the first time ever. And like, my dad died last year and that was his venue. And I got all emotional when I saw it on the routing. And it was going to be this like day. And like, dudes were texting me about it. And it's like, this emotional thing, like my dad, Long Island Gary, like the garden, like all that never happened. And so like, yeah, there's loss and we could boohoo about it, or we just get proactive about it. And for me and Randy and Joel and Brandon, it was like, how do we replace what the band should have made from the Slipknot tour, a 40-day tour, touring the biggest venues ever had. And we're like, well, let's come up with this plan, see where it goes. And we're at 310% to date.
Wow.
On
of
what
revenue?
We should have made. Good. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
That's so cool, like, man.
You could put me on wow. three Slipknot tours and I just did three live streams for my hometown.
Well, the expenses right. sure did go down. Because, I mean, that's one of the things that seems crazy is having a production, having to travel with it or rent it or bring it in, set it up, go 400 miles. You don't have to do that as much. So that's a big deal as far as actual profits
and
stuff.
You can spend all the money on production.
Yeah, there's two right. trends embedded in what you just unpacked there, Tim, which is such a good, clear vision. I'm so glad to hear you say all those things. They're very clear thinking. I'm sure you're exactly right, minus all the things that there are to figure out. But two things that puts pressure on. Number one is quite exciting for me is the gatekeeper side of the music business that does want it to go back. You have all that people that are just invested in the old model, like you talked about L.A., you know, nepotism and every other thing. Music business, just as bad. Not as big, not as extreme, not as Weinstein, but bad. You know, like the music business is full of people that are just rent-seeking takers, and they're not trying to fix shit.
Correct.
You know, they're not going to. And so this other thing's going to move on. Now, here's the real positive thing. If you can only do 10 shows... then there's 20 or 30 other markets that don't get it. Well, guess what? People live everywhere in the world. So there's people that live in the middle of Montana that don't, nobody ever comes to Billings anyway. So they're not really out, but they're actually in. So there's some people who never get concerts that now people are going to be trying to serve. And when you talk about an internet connection, you just enough to get 24p and HD or whatever. Okay. Now our fans aren't those 800 people that'll come see us in San Antonio. It's potentially everybody in a village in India.
Right.
Correct.
Now.
Right.
So that's that.
Correct.
And we don't need, and the gatekeepers of the legacy, all that stuff, we don't need them either. So that's double good news for me.
Yeah. The live tickets are merely the vehicle to pay for the production.
Right.
Where stream one,
right.
It's all going back to you. And I'd be remiss without saying, the beauty of doing the live stream, you know, our live streams were $15. The average market value is 10. And we kind of landed on, we're going to charge an extra $5, which when you say, yo, it's an extra $5 for something quality, it doesn't sound bad. But from a manager, music industry metric, it's like, why is your stream 50% over the market rate? It's like saying average tickets are $50, but our tour is going to be $75. And someone goes, why? You know, it's not about the dollar. It's about the percentage hike above the theoretical standard value for what this is now. And in our heads, when we priced it at 15, there was no appropriated value because everyone's trying to take small money to fix small problems. And in turn, they give you small deliverables. They give you an average stream for $10. It scratches your itch because you, like Toby was saying earlier, I'm stuck in the house with the kids, the wife, and then we finally got to watch so-and-so play and we cried because that was the song we fell in love with like 20 years ago. And there's all this nostalgia. And it was a great night. And, you know, 5,000 people buy your $10 tickets, 50 grand, everyone wins. In our head, $15, that extra $5, which is nothing to you, Toby, or you, Matt, or you, Reva, allowed us to deliver 300% of what the average live stream deliverables are visually. And what's interesting about it is it's like a pay-per-view. And like Dana White and the UFC have honestly been like, in my head, envisioning all of this, the number one model. Like when someone goes, oh, what stream did you see? It's like, I've just been paying attention to UFC. Like, what Dana White did with Fight Island and all this stuff, regardless of if it's gimmicky or real or whatever, like the fact that he was able to create a business that is meant to have people screaming for Khabib or Conor McGregor or any of these people, John Jones, so on and so forth. And you want to hear this guy talk about this. Like, he rebuilt the whole model within 2 months. And like, that is, to me, that agility that I look at. And it's like, overall, $15 is what you pay to park in Manhattan to come see us.
Right.
Before your ticket, before your $12 beer. Right.
Babysitter.
And if you bring three friends, guess what? It's a $30 ticket plus Ticketmaster fees, making it 38 times four.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're at 150 plus dollars plus parking. And for $15, you and three friends can all pitch in $5 and see a better show with better seats because you have no seats. Right. You are literally on me. You are on Spencer. You are on Aaron. You are on everyone. You don't have to look past. And when you have to piss, guess what? You pause it. Right. Like, how is this not a better solution? And at $15, you can't go wrong because it's not $15 per person. It's $15 per link. So now we're creating a scenario in which people in, you know, Mexico that don't have money, don't have flights, can barely make anything that want to participate. Like, their whole family can pitch in a dollar. You get 15 people with a dollar and you could have the best Under Oath experience, not like an Under Oath experience, better than if you saw us at the House of Blues. Like, my
from
wife,
the back, at least,
my wife and my sister-in-law, Rachel, literally told me after stream one, because they weren't there, obviously, because it had to be like locked out because of COVID. Rachel has five kids and she comes to a lot of our shows as much as she can. And we give her VIP box seats. She has a newborn. She's like, I have been to like three or four of your shows. I have never seen you the way I saw you last night. And if you did that every hometown show, I wouldn't even show up. I'd rather just sit at home and see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so imagine,
we got to work to create that. Yeah.
So
for everybody in the world.
So theoretically, we fixed. So going back to my and Matt's like sidebar conversation, we fixed that. So now what happens when you fix it? And then there's three more camera angles that show 3,000 people too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in real time.
Yeah.
Right.
You live stream the fight in the mosh pit. You live stream the kid in the wheelchair that gets crowd surfed up. Like, we had happen in Vegas. This is all happening literally right now. There's not like a 5 second delay when someone says, fuck, we bleep it. It is real. It is live. So like, take that and then give that an energy of even 50% capacity. It changes everything. And so like, if you can build it and if you can build a streaming model that takes nobody, you shouldn't be concerned that there's only 50% of the people in front of you. You could build a whole streaming model to where they don't even see the 50 people in front of you. You know, 50% of the people are probably in a 100 cap room. Like, they're all on Lazy Boys because of social distancing. Just make sure the camera doesn't hit them. Like, you can play for people and play for so many more people on a live stream model in tandem without them even crossing. The second it goes back to where you can have mosh pits, it's game over. It's a game over. Like, I want our, like, I was even going back, like, our Shrine show and our USF Sundome show should have been live streamed to the world. Mm-hmm. They were the most, those are the shows you walk out going, I wish my wife could have seen that.
Right.
And I call her, how was the show? Oh, you wouldn't believe it. And she's like, I know, I won't. I couldn't see it. What if my mom could have seen that? What if my wife could have seen
that? You're right.
Yeah.
Let's fix that. And And if you sell 5,000 tickets live stream at $10 and you sell 5,000 tickets at $38 plus fees and everyone's happy, as long as you give these people a different experience, it's going to be a compounding interest scenario. And then what gets me really excited is the kid who comes to LA in the front row and then 30 days later, hometown show in Tampa in an arena, buys the $15 live stream and gets two completely different experiences that doesn't devalue his VIP ticket for the front row in person, because that's a completely different experience that you'll never be able to recreate. But gives him a completely different look, him or her. And now all of a sudden you're blowing people away 38 days on the road. And then day 39, you're promoting day 40 being live streamed. How many of those people that came and got blown away re-pipe in for the live stream just because mm-hmm. they want a different angle? And so now you have to build a business that's bigger.
Not to mention the sound, because look, this may be an unpopular opinion, but I like sound. I like audio and engineering and recording. And my opinion is all live sound sucks. It's like the experience of a live show is something you can't replace, but live sound isn't my favorite.
It's very hard.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, out of all the shows I've been to, I feel the subs kicking me in the chest, and that is a special thing, yes. But it doesn't ever sound great. There's a very, two handfuls of times I can say the sound was amazingly excellent in the room. But with this, you have more ability to get the drum fill right up and have the actual audio be better too. Yes, I understand what's missing, but I'm just saying there's more potential for quality of our live show to be mixed at a higher level to more people. So you see that you get the one VIP person who's in person, and he doesn't hear, that's not a good sound experience in a mosh pit necessarily.
Correct.
That's not what it's about. So then you go and watch the live stream 2 weeks later when you play in Tampa, and he gets this super dialed production mix and angles that he couldn't see from the mosh pit. So you do add, you don't take away. It's
correct.
It's addition. It's an addition. And it adds more people and more places and more dimensions. All of that's left to be, it's just all got to be, worked out. And then those, all the norms, I really enjoy seeing people, I guess I got a stream, and they go on Facebook and they're sad when they have their guitar and they're looking at the comment. Like these lead singers that I've seen on stage go, make some fucking noise, put your hands up, how y'all having a good time? Like they know all the stuff to do on stage, and then they go on Facebook and it's like,
and they flounder. Yeah.
And they're reading four comments for 20 seconds.
Hey
and
thanks,
then say,
Kevin from Phoenix. We'll hope you get back there soon, man. Yeah. Okay, let me play a song. And you're just like, come on. Like, that isn't, you're right. That feels.
It's got to get new norms there. We'll figure them out, though.
Yeah, and I think for every band, it's different. For instance, Amber Lynn, their fan comment interaction is a huge component of their show. And it's proven that.
But they've recognized it, yeah.
And their fans love it.
Right.
And they love it. And it just alleviates this pressure of doing everything perfect, because they can play and then they banter with Matt Carter BC says, Steven looks like he hasn't slept in 24 hours. And then they're all joking and all of a sudden they go in. I think that would actually work really well for you guys, because if there's a BC Emory live stream, it's the music is dead serious. But you guys have heard us on the internet for 5-10 years now. We're not serious people. So if you can merge those, that's your new live stream, BC Con, whatever it is. And I'm not trying to fix you guys. I'm sure you guys are already cooking. But it's that. It's not whatever we did is the model. It's we proved that the model can work. And every band now can go in and go, what works there and what doesn't? And how do we fuse those best practices from this, which should be standard, and then how do we make it ours for our fan base? And our fan base doesn't care if Aaron sees a comment about how good his drumming is and talks to them. We're a band that plays music, and that's always going to be our band, and we're never going to ever probably not be that band. But it's for another band who's more personable, or a rapper or a spoken word poet who has more of a dialogue-based scenario, give me a 55-inch TV with the comments. And I'll even start freestyling and just pull shit from the comments and blow seven kids' minds, And all of a sudden the chat blows up going, he heard me, this, that, and the other. So it's we're just getting started. We didn't fix anything. We just proved an idea as a big bang, it's about to get wild. I can't imagine what Bring Me the Horizon, A Day to Remember, all these bands are doing. They're just going with permission now.
Yeah.
Going, it's a viable business. How big do we want to make this?
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't A Day to Remember just break up?
No, I think that was a joke, wasn't it? I think it was a joke.
Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah, I think it was a joke.
I don't know.
Yeah,
okay,
I think it was a joke that they did. But yeah, I mean, the... That is the thing that I like about this is the future is wide open. It feels a little bit like the Wild West right now. All you got to do is just work. It just requires work and some effort and thinking about, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like just the audio, like you were just talking about, Matt, way more times in my life have I heard, yeah, the sound wasn't that great then.
Right.
Oh, you know, and it can't be there, but you can really offer something. If you give somebody their money's worth, they'll love it. That's what I'm saying. Like NBA, I've been watching NBA basketball in the bubble, and I've loved it because I just thought it was a great product. I've really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Football so far has been great. There's going to be a lot of different things where you go, wait a minute, I can't go in person, but I might get something different that I like just as much. Wait a minute, this is really cool. Oh gosh, I don't stand in line for a beer. I just went to Walmart and got a 12-pack or something. You know what I mean? Like for half as much or you know, way less. There's all kinds of...
For sure.
There are ways now that might save people money to do shows like this and also provide something that is way more quality than they've ever been able to experience. I'm pretty excited about it. There's a lot to come, and so we'll see. I don't know. Hopefully I don't die of COVID. That'd be the best thing. But other than that, but Tim, this has been great, dude. I'm so glad you came on, man. Thanks for sharing so much damn information with us. My God. Small business owner, massive band, cool dude. What don't you do, my friend? My God.
Well, dude,
yeah, what about your enemies? You got to have enemies. Are thinking, I hope this COVID thing takes out those damn under oath guys and those King State guys, but nope.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm pissing them off. I don't know. But yeah, no, I love talking to you guys. And yeah, Matt texted me literally a couple days ago. He's like, yo, let's talk. I'm like, great. I didn't even know what we were talking about. So this is awesome.
Yeah, this has been great, dude.
And I think, you know, before I leave, I think that you guys have been kind of pioneers in, you know, talking about live streams and how did Under Oath even come up with that? It's like, I've seen you guys doing that whole thing the whole time. You know, it's been a podcast and then it was a podcast conference and then it's, you know, Emery's Displaced. So it's like the Matt and Toby thing. And it's like, you guys have been doing living room shows all the way to like massive clubs to conferences to all of that. Like you guys are the antithesis of what everyone needs to do in COVID already. And you've been doing that forever. It's like, we're bored. Me and Toby are sitting around. Dudes are doing other work. Like, what else can we do? And it's like Matt, Toby, and whoever else it is. I know you have your crew of podcast dudes, yeah. But it's like, you guys have been building white space businesses the whole time. And it's like, you guys are already there. So, I mean, you guys kind of set the blueprint for a lot of people, I think, already. And yeah, I'm glad to be part of the fringe because I've been looking at you guys as the fringe for a bit. So it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just going to keep sharing information and we'll keep sharing it with the people as we get it. I've got definitely some ideas and thoughts, but they're just directions more than solutions. But that's, I'm happy with that. So yeah. I've got plenty of things to go work on. So that's all I can ask for.
There we are.
All right, Tim. Thanks, dude.
All right, dudes. Thanks so much.
I'm the guy that dies at the beginning of the movie. I'm the one who never makes it out of the cave. It's because just when I have got everything going for me, baby, you come around and take it all away. Whoa, whoa. Back to shore. It's your face I can't take, and my knees are about to buckle the same way as they did the night you walked through my door. Whoa, 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 whoa. It's true. Whoa, 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 whoa. I'd do anything for you. She asked if this is cool. One kiss more every time my eyes to blow itself up from the inside. I will dig a foxhole for two, so you know that I will always be there for you. And maybe you could find a love for me too.
Whoa, whoa.
Kiss more.